Hello, everybody. I'm Jacob Dettoni, and this is the FDI podcast. Investing and doing business in Afghanistan is not for everyone. It takes sheer commitment and audacity to run a business in the midst of the country's numerous stability and security challenges. Today, I have the pleasure to be here in our studio in London with one of the few foreign executives that took a gamble to defy perception and moved to Kabul to run a bank. Anthony Bard, welcome to the FDI podcast.
Thank you.
Anthony is the CEO of the Afghanistan International Bank, or AIB, the largest commercial bank in the country. He has led the bank since 2016, after having served as the chairman of its audit committee since 2008. Anthony, you have over 40 years of commercial banking experience. You work with groups of the likes of Barclays Group, the Bank of Ceylon, but you also worked as a consultant for Booz Allen and Hamilton, and you are an associate of the Chartered Institute of Bankers here in London. So take us through the decision process that led you to let somebody with your professional background to accept the job in Kabul.
Going into a semi-retirement after leaving Bank of Ceylon and had the opportunity with Asian Development Bank to do a short-term assignment in Afghanistan. After completing that, I was communicated by a small U.S. consulting company to go and talk to AIB, which I did. And again, did some short-term assignments for them. I found working with AIB interesting. It was unique in many ways in Afghanistan that it wasn't run by the shareholders. It had a CEO and it had a separate board. Governance was very strong. And there was clearly an opportunity to see the bank growing over the next few years. And I then slowly moved from being a consultant to eventually taking over as the CEO. Bank has been very interesting to manage. We have developed very well over the last 14 years.
Right.
Afghanistan, yes, is not the ideal place to live. But I think if you have a employment that you enjoy, then you can overlook some of the inconveniences of living in Kabul. Obviously, there are numerous reasons to spend some time on business outside of Kabul.
Sure.
But basically, yes, I'm Kabul-based.
Despite the business opportunities, not for everyone to move to Kabul. How do you like your life in Kabul? Tell us what it looks like, actually, to be there as the CEO of a bank.
From a living point of view, it's quiet. The security risk, we like to think, is exaggerated. Like in many cities these days, you just have to take normal precautions.
Such as? What are normal precautions?
Well, we would travel in armored vehicles, not because we expect anyone to follow or attack the vehicles. But if you are closer to an explosion, you're much safer in an armored vehicle than you are in a thin-skinned vehicle.
Yep.
So that's just one of the practical things that you can do. And you don't walk in the streets very much. And if you are traveling, you keep an irregular times for traveling.
Sure.
So, but otherwise, Kabul, if you drive around, has as many traffic jams as London. The streets are very busy. A lot of children playing. All the shops are open. So it doesn't look like a city that has problems. It looks like a fairly normal city.
So it's interesting that you say that the security risk is lower than perceived outside the country. And, you know, sometimes this is really the reality, not just in Afghanistan, but, you know, many other countries that have experienced years of conflict or civil wars or political instability. And, you know, this also leads us to addressing the issue of how to run a business, what are the real opportunities for business and for foreign investment. We know that foreign investors, they want stability and the opportunity to take a long term view on their investments, and not necessarily this is something that is easily associated to a country like Afghanistan. So let's talk about the Afghanistan International Bank. Do you want to give us a very brief summary of its shareholders? I know there is a foreign capital component, but do you want to give us a brief overview?
The bank was founded in 2004 by three Afghan families and Asian Development Bank. Slowly over those years, the shareholding has changed slightly. One of the original shareholders was purchased out by the two existing private shareholders. ADB came to the end of what is normally its investment period of around 10 years, and the two private shareholders purchased those. So for a short time, we had just two shareholders. And then IFC purchased 7.5%. The private shareholders are Afghan families who have had business in Afghanistan, but business outside of Afghanistan. And back in 2004, agreed to open Afghanistan International Bank with a view to helping to develop the economy of Afghanistan, which I think we've done extremely well at. We are a very ethical bank. Our governance is extremely strong. And that has allowed us over the years to develop business, initially with the American Army. And probably one of the main events after that was the purchase of Standard and Chartered's branch in Kabul in 2012. Mm-hmm. Given that, AIB then provided banking services virtually to all of the main institutions operating in Afghanistan, the UN, NATO, American Embassy, British Embassy. So we had a core base of very strong institutional business, as well as all of the main banking houses, commercial houses in the country.
The bank has got 37 branches across the country, 107 ATMs and 2 cash outlets. What is the relationship between Afghans and a commercial bank? Is there a tradition of savings? Obviously, Afghanistan is an Islamic republic, so I guess Islamic finance also plays a major role in what you do. At the same time, obviously, you are working with all these international organizations that you mentioned. But what looking forward, how do you see this relationship between banking and the Afghan population develop?
There was not a culture of banking in Afghanistan prior to the beginning of the 2000. It was an area where you had not seen British or other countries providing banking services, not like India or Pakistan. So when we opened, there wasn't a culture of banking, and employees were not used to that culture. So that has slowly developed and is ongoing. AIB chose to concentrate on the corporate business initially. We now have a substantial number of individual customers, and we will continue to develop that, and we will continue to develop Western banking practices, moving away more from bricks and mortar to electronic systems. The banking now is accepted. The people earning salaries in Kabul and the other major centers all have bank accounts. Most now will have internet, and we have a very strong internet banking system. Phone banking systems will develop. When you look outside of the main centers, you do have a problem. Communications traveling and to some of the smaller cities and villages is extremely difficult and not safe to move cash around the country. So there is part of the population that is still unbanked. And there's a lot of discussions of how that gets improved. AIB's view is it needs to be done in conjunction with the phone companies because it's not possible to have bricks and mortar in many of these smaller areas of population. But there is efforts from the central bank and the commercial banks to broaden the banking base. Sharia banking has been only fairly recently introduced. It is developing slowly, but maybe the lack of growth relates back to the economic situation in the country. You're not seeing a lot of growth in the conventional banks, which especially on the loan side. So that sort of explains why Sharia banking isn't growing on the loan side either.
Yeah.
But you know, as far as AIB is concerned, we're happy to deliver either conventional products or Sharia-based products.
Is this something that people ask you for, Sharia banking, or they don't really care?
The majority of the companies would prefer conventional. Obviously, we are a very religious country, so some of our customers prefer the Sharia way of lending. And as I said earlier, we still don't have that big a retail base. You probably see more demand for Sharia banking at the retail base, so that we are slowly opening up.
Anthony, is it profitable to run a bank in Afghanistan?
We think it's if you run it with good governance and you follow international banking standards, which AIB has always been done. The word international in some ways was misleading to put in the title because we're not international. We don't have branches outside of Afghanistan. But I think if you asked many of the businesses or people in Kabul, why is it international? Why is it Afghanistan International Bank? The answer you would get is that the bank is run on international standards.
Right.
And that we have done because that's also allowed us to maintain strong correspondent banks outside of Afghanistan, which is necessary to support the trade in Afghanistan. And AIB has been for a number of years and still is the only bank that can provide dollar payments out of the country and receive dollars coming into the country. That's very profitable for us. We, over the years, and still achieve about a 13% return on equity, which is good for any bank.
To run a bank according to international standards, you also need other international executives or professionals that can bring to the table their international experience. You were actually mentioning that right this morning you met somebody you interviewed somebody for a position as a director. So what is your sales pitch? What is the feedback that you get from people when you approach them, offering them or like inquiring them about interest in working in Afghanistan?
Looking at our employees, we have been moving away from employing expatriates. Over the 15 years that we've been open for, the Afghani employees have developed and we've spent a lot of resources on training them. Our aim within the next 2 or 3 years is to reduce the expatriates in the bank down to 2, probably was about 7 at the highest time. So that we will, I think that will be quite an accomplishment and we should manage it in, as I said, 2 or 3 years' time. When we're looking for directors, we're looking for people that will add value across a number of areas. And we're looking at people who have experience in banks and outside of banking, but understand the requirements to be a board director, to be able to give sufficient time to the board. We are maybe a little bit unique that we really do have independent directors as against what happens in some Afghan banks. So getting people to be interested in directorships in a bank that you can see fairly easily from our annual reports is successful. So you can get the interest in the banks. Then you have to explain to them that the security situation is they're not going to be at risk when they visit us in Afghanistan. And what you tend to find is that once you've taken somebody to Afghanistan for the first time, there's very little problem in getting them to come back a second time.
Another interesting aspect of, doing banking in Afghanistan is also making sure that the money doesn't end up in the wrong hands, right? So is it compliance or due diligence on your clients another big challenge in what you're doing?
People have the perception that Afghanistan is high risk for many different reasons and want to know that the bank's anti-money laundering and KYC is strong, which probably results in us having stronger KYC than many of the other banks that the correspondent bank serves, because of the perception of Afghanistan. We have to prove that the systems and processes within the bank do actually come up to international standards. And that has to be confirmed by third-party inspections of the banks, which we've done very well with. So the two are very closely together. If we do not have strong KYC and keep it up to date, we would lose our correspondent banking relationships, which would seriously damage our profitability. So I think by any international standards, we're very strong on all aspects of anti-money laundering.
Anthony, yesterday the Afghan embassy here in London organized the second Afghanistan-UK business conference. There was a good number of people attending and listening to several ministers that flew in to share their view and the opportunity they want to pitch among British and foreign investors. Is it realistic to forecast the rise of foreign investment into Afghanistan in any foreseeable future?
There's a lot of things that are dependent on, obviously, the security and political situation in the country. There's no reason to believe now that both are not going to improve. I don't think anyone expects to see a rush of foreign investment coming into the country, but we have to get out the name of Afghanistan. We have to explain to people that there's two Afghanistans, one that you see on TV regarding explosions and one where the country does work and is progressing successfully. At the moment, a lot of the investment in Afghanistan is coming from Afghans who have left the country at one time or another and now are reinvesting in it successfully. And I think events like the ambassador arranged, this year was the second year, and I think was considered by all to be a step up from the first year. And I think we'll see that progressing as we go along. But I think everybody agrees that we have to do more public relations for Afghanistan to remove the thought of people that it's just a very difficult place to live and work. To some extent it is, but everything is you can overcome. And I think slowly we will see more foreign investment again. And we're in a position to help any of the companies that want to come into the country.
What are the three key steps that anybody interested in investing into Afghanistan should take?
Well, I think there were some good comments on this yesterday. I'm not sure there's three, but local knowledge, I think, is important. And for a foreign investor, the main advice that came from yesterday's meeting was, yes, you should consider having a local investor, but make sure that you do very good due diligence on that person. Somebody who understands Afghanistan and has good contacts will be useful to you. But also you can make a mistake and get the wrong local partner. So the key message there was coming out was do your due diligence on your local partner. We like to think from the bank's point of view that investors will also do due diligence on their banks and hopefully choose AIB. And again, yesterday our partner insurance company was there, so we can provide most of the financial services from a banking or insurance point of view that a foreign company is looking for. The British Embassy is very helpful in explaining and helping people open business in Afghanistan, as is the US Embassy and probably the other embassies. So it's a matter of really understanding and doing your homework as to where the opportunities in the country are. And there's plenty of help to get you started from inside the country.
And I definitely believe, and I felt myself yesterday being at a conference, that there is a big drive, a combined effort by authorities, government authorities, the embassy, but also executives that are living and working in Afghanistan, like yourself, to put the word out there that there is a way, there are opportunities for business in Afghanistan, and the perception in this particular case can be slightly misleading to some extent, as you're saying. That security is an issue, but is not the only issue, and it's not the only thing that you should focus on when doing business over there. So, ladies and gentlemen, Anthony Barnes, the CEO of the Afghanistan International Bank. You can find all the details and all the financial reporting on the bank's website, which is, Anthony, correct me if I'm wrong, aib.af.
Correct.
Thank you very much, Anthony, for this very insightful discussion.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can follow all our podcasts on our website, fdintelligence.com/podcast, and on Acast and iTunes. Until the next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of The Next Five podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next Five wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.